You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For those of you listeners who know my background a bit, you might remember the stories of my first few jobs after college. From being a mall cop to selling makeup door-to-door, I realized that I had skills that were being underutilized and that these minimum wage jobs couldn't support me or last forever. I spent years going through YouTube, reading books, listening to podcasts, and taking enough online courses to reinvent myself as a professional copywriter and digital marketer. Years later, thanks to my side hustles and drive, I've worked with national news outlets, multi-million dollar tech startups, nonprofits, and celebrities to build their brands and drive sales. None of this could have happened if I didn't develop in-demand skills. I had to do this alone, but you don't have to. You have Hustlers University 2.0. Hustlers University 2.0 is a community where you can learn real skills to earn money online today, starting with side hustles you can use to elevate your game. I'm not just an advocate for Hustlers University, I'm also a student. Every professor is verified to be making 10K to 500K monthly in their selected field. You get full resources, lesson plans, and an active community of thousands of other Hustlers University students working on skills such as stock analysis, cryptocurrencies, e-commerce, copywriting, which was my favorite course, one I actually went ahead and took last month. And as a copywriter of 7 years, I even took a ton out of that, including some of the resources I was able to take over to my day job. You also learn freelancing, financial planning, affiliate marketing, business management, and so much more. If you're tired of depending on a boss who hates you to deliver your paycheck, or have learned since the lockdowns that controlling the source of your income is vital to your individual freedom, sign up for Hustlers University 2.0 today using the link in the show notes. I'll see you there.
That's awesome. Up,
nothing much, man. Good to have you on.
I'm glad to be here, man.
Yeah, so I'm not a real professional, so I just like to jump into the conversation since I've already got my mindset on this. Justin, there are three people who helped get me into jiu-jitsu, and they all have nothing to do with each other. One was Anthony Bourdain. I went ahead and saw an interview he did where he talked about his love of jiu-jitsu, and there's this crazy video online when he got his blue belt, I think 6-7 years ago, where he actually competed in a tournament and he didn't look like the drug addict, chronic smoking, drinking Anthony Bourdain we all think of. He looked healthy and he looked alive and he kicked ass. The second one is Joe Rogan, because he won't stop talking about it. And the third person is you, because you used to post all these awesome photos of you grappling dudes and succeeding and doing something outside of your day-to-day job. And I was like, shoot, that looks pretty freaking cool. And then when I started getting involved, you really helped motivate me and mentor me as I was really just like, you know, getting into it. Like my white belt was still white.
Right.
So I want to start off the show just by thanking you for being there at the beginning days. And now I'm only a few months away from my 1 year mark, and it has been transformative.
No, I'm glad to hear that, man. Glad to be on the same list as Joe Rogan for something.
it's wild. I think you know, for listeners, I've done a few episodes talking about my first, you know, my first season in jiu-jitsu and everything. And it has been a lot of getting my ass kicked. It's been a lot of me having to pressure through a lot of stuff I was really uncomfortable with. And it's also been one of the best decisions I've made in my life. And I really don't say that lightly. It's brought me community. It's brought my confidence back. I mean, there was the physical stuff, sure. But I mean, just feeling like there was something genuinely set aside just for me that wasn't work related, that wasn't related to making money, that wasn't related to anything else I had really pitched my life to. It became a real place where I could just focus on something that was just absolutely for me. So I kind of want to turn the spotlight on you for a minute. When did you start doing jiu-jitsu? Did you always have a martial arts background? I mean, what kind of jump-started that journey for you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I grew up, you know, same in the 90s, you know, watching UFC and stuff like that. So, you know, I had an, you know, early exposure to jiu-jitsu. But you know, there wasn't even in like the 90s and early 2000s, and I'm other than Southern California, you know, there, even where I live, there weren't a lot of, you know, gyms near where I was living with my parents, but my parents had put me in karate. Cause you know, that was like what everybody did, you know, in the early days for martial arts, like everybody knew what karate was. So, you know, I had like a super white sensei named Sensei Tony, and he was this Japanese, you know, this expert karate guy apparently, you know, so. I did that for like probably a year or two, you know, as a kid, you know, learned some kicks and strikes, but, you know, and it kind of was like, kind of give you a false confidence. You know, I feel like I did it. I was in there just like literally just beating up chicks, you know, like, but I'm like, she's a higher belt than me. So it's okay. She's bigger than me, you know, and you're,
I can take on the world.
I know karate. And then, you know, you get like punched in the face and you're like, oh wait, we have pads on and helmets and it's just different. And then, yeah, so I did that for a little bit, but then I always really wanted to do jiu-jitsu. Like even at the early age, I would just like watch the UFC and I'd practice with my friends some moves and stuff. We were, you know, doing it totally wrong, but it looked cool though. Like, yeah, takedowns and arm bars. And then when I was in high school, I met a guy in wrestling, and you know, we were about to graduate, and he was like, hey man, what are you doing after high school? And I was like, I'm going to college in the area. He's like, do you want to come do some jiu-jitsu with me? At the gym in our town. I'm like, oh, there's a gym here? Yeah, man, sure. So I go to this gym with him, and I still remember it to this day. It was Bakersfield Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, the black belt, Matt Baker. He's just an absolute beast. I think he's a fourth degree black belt under John Jack Machado. You know, just an absolute savage. And third or fourth, but yeah, he's the guy. And I go in there, and I'm just like rolling around, getting just, you know, massacred by people. You know, just like what is happening? You know, I think I can do something, but I'm just getting just destroyed. And I loved it. Like that first day I was like, oh yeah, this is my jam. And the coach comes up to me after practice and he's like, hey, I know it's like your first day, but we're going to a tournament tomorrow. Do you want to go with us and compete? And I was like, yeah, let's go. And I end up, you know, day two, I'm in Torrance, California. And, I'm at like John Jack Machado's school at his academy, and he's one of the referees. And I'm like a cherry white belt. Like I had to buy a gi that day at his school, you know? And, I lost both of my matches. You know, I was trying to like, I was trying to submit a guy while I was in his guard, and my coach is just yelling at me. He's just like, that's not possible. Stop it. And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, you know, day two of jiu-jitsu, I'm like, oh, it's possible. I'm trying to cross collar choke this guy while I'm in his guard. Like
I saw that Hoist Gracie video one time. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Oh, I'll show you, coach, you know, and I'm losing. And then, my second opponent comes out and I'm like, well, I lost my first match. Maybe my second guy will be easier. This guy comes out. He's like five times my height. He's like 6'5", you know, super long. And he just lays on me and smothers me and wins. And And I still had fun. You know, I was like, oh, this was great. So I trained there, you know, get back on the track. I trained there for a while, graduated, joined the Army, did some of the combative stuff, at basic, and, you know, combatives in the Army at the entry level is just people, you know, it's like fighting with an older brother, you know, there really is
don't get punched.
Yeah. There's no technique. It's pretty much all like first person to get a Kimura or, you know, an Americana, and then they go 100% muscle on it. So, but, you know, that was fun. Kind of did that. And then I met a guy when I was going through the, at Fort Bragg, they had a combative school, and I was doing level one, and I'd come back for level two. And there was a guy there. I thought he was like a special forces guy, 'cause he had like a beard. He looked kind of like a civilian. And I'm like, who is this guy? Like, he doesn't have a uniform. And turns out, he was a Hoist Gracie black belt, was it Roy Marsh? Not Roy Marsh. Just know you're getting old. Memory starts going. His name is Roy. I don't remember his last name. But
Roy
with
the beard.
Yeah. It was Roy Marsh. And, he was a black belt with, the team in the area, and he was traveling, and now he's the only Hoist Gracie black belt in Germany. He's an instructor up there. He's a great guy. But I was talking to him, and because he knew all these moves, like we only know like 12 moves in combatives too, you know, and he's out there, he's out there showing us how to do stuff. I'm like, man, this guy's crazy good. You know, wrist locking us and all kinds of stuff. I'm like, what is happening? And he's like, yeah, you should check out the team in the area and train there and look into it. I'm like, okay. So I trained a little bit with the team that's in North Carolina. And then when I moved up to Virginia, the affiliate of that school was up here. So I started training there. So it was just kind of like, you know, a little bit here, a little bit here. I'm like the classic, you know, jiu-jitsu guy where it was like, I was one place 5 months and you go to a new school and you start all over, and then you move cities, you go to a new school. So you're constantly getting exposure, but you're never at anywhere long enough to get like rank, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like you just travel around, and then I took like 5 years off for work. And then I got back into it. I was like, you know what? I need this. Like, I miss it. I got to get back into it. And then doing it again for the last 2 years, just getting back on track, trying to move up, trying to keep training and get my skills down. But yeah, it's been a trip, man. It's been a journey, but you know, through it all, I got to say it's worth it. I mean, like what you said with the health, the mental health, just the exercise, the community, like doing jiu-jitsu is probably one of the best things you can just do for your life in general, no matter who you are. 'Cause it really, you know, it really forces you to just focus on one thing. And at the same time, it helps you like relieve stress. You know, it lets you choke people, you know, like instead of you having a, you know, a random outburst at work and, you know, choking somebody there, you just wait till you go to do jiu-jitsu and you choke your friends. So,
oh my gosh, there was, my school started offering like 5:45 and 6 a.m. classes.
Oh, so, yes. I call those the breakfast club.
those have been amazing. And I don't know why I'm so excited to wake up for those in the morning, because I never enjoyed waking up for 5 a.m. PT. But yeah, it was one of those things where it's like, if I can get through an hour of that in the morning, the rest of the day, I'm just like on cruise control.
You just feel so good. You're like, all right.
That guy just flipped me the bird while I'm driving to work. My boss is mad at me. Like, it's just one of those things where everything is just muted just a little bit. But I mean, it's funny how you mentioned karate at the beginning. You know, my brother, Ryan's a first degree black belt in Taekwondo. And I was a brown belt. Since I'm older, like, because we moved around so much, I actually had to start up twice from white belt. So, and ironically, both times, because I switched associations, you know, mid move, you know, I always got up to brown belt. But when Ryan and I were competing in Taekwondo in Texas, where we kind of started, like, you know, I thought we were kicking ass and taking names. Like, we were good for everyone else just doing Taekwondo. But I'll never forget, I was at Marion Military Institute, and one of the other cadets, we went over to the gym. And I don't know what started it. Like, it was a friend of mine. We were just gonna like spar. It was like, oh, you know, I've done wrestling and a little bit of jiu-jitsu, and you know, you've done Taekwondo, Martinez. Like, let's see it. I thought I was like, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme. I got destroyed. And this guy was like half my size. I had like a good 20 pounds on him too. And I just remember like I'm being manhandled by a midget. I don't know what is happening. I just remember it was like the biggest feeling of humiliation, but we went round after round after round. And I always had to be the person to strike first, which I was like, you know, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. And he never hit me. He would just like take me down. And yeah. he would do like this crazy Spider-Man shit all over me, and he's like flipping around, and I'm just like, this leprechaun is like choking me out. Like, what's wrong with this? But that was one of the first times I realized like something is not working. And it gets to the point where it's just like, you know, maybe the system that you were taught works against other people fighting by the same rules and stuff like that. But ultimately, what I had was I had more height, I had more reach, and I had more weight on this person. When I was on the ground, I was useless. That stuck with me for years. That's when I realized it's like, you know, everything I'd basically been taught doesn't apply if I'm playing by Taekwondo rules. And this goes for any other type of like, you know, martial arts discipline kind of like that. And this person is playing to win, which is get them down as fast as possible, submit him as fast as possible and keep him down. And that's what kind of did it for me. At that point, I was just like, yeah, this is not working.
Yeah. It was like an eye opener for you. And you realize that what I noticed with jiu-jitsu too, is that like, it makes you more aware of like violence and how chaotic violence is, where you're now, when you start doing martial arts, start doing jiu-jitsu, you get comfortable, you know, rolling and submitting people and things, and you become better at violence, and at the same time you're like less likely to want to get into a physical altercation with somebody. Like when I did karate, like I mean, again, it was just like, you know, Sensei Tony, you know, it was basically like Cobra Kai, you know, like I go kick the other kids, you know, and I'm out there doing it. But when I even as a little kid doing karate, it gave you that false sense of confidence and made you want to go kick. I want to go punch stuff and stuff. And then, you know, I would get in a few altercations where I'd go to a friend's house for like a barbecue. And I was like, I probably was like in the fifth grade. And my friend, it was a set of siblings, brother and sister, but their cousins would come over and they're like 15. And, you know, so they're like older than us and they're big kids, you know. And one of her brothers at the time, I think he was 18. Our cousins was like, he was already in the Navy and he was boxing in the Navy. Yeah, I'm in the fifth and sixth grade. You know, I'm still a kid, but I do karate, so I'm like, oh, I can punch, I can strike, let's go. And we used to put on like boxing gloves, and this kid is a grown man, would just beat me to death, like just punch, like bam, bam, bam. And I was just like, man, like there is nothing I can do against this guy with my kicks and strikes. Like I weigh like 90 pounds. I can't, like, you know, I can't hurt him. And then you get into jiu-jitsu, and then you can just absolutely choke. I was rolling with a guy at my gym the other day who weighs 200 plus pounds, like probably almost 300 pounds. And I we were on the ground rolling around and I could control him. You know, I could not do that with karate.
No.
Break my back like Bane, you know? Like,
yeah. You think darkness is your ally? There was a moment recently where I started remembering like my very first class. I went to the adult gi class at a crossover jiu-jitsu here in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. And the Wednesday class is like the ball breaker class. That's where you go. Yes. To, like, you know, everyone is just breathing heavy at the end of the class, hating their life, but also feeling awesome. And I remember this was my first class. I hadn't been taught anything. It was like half the class was learning one thing and the rest of it was live rolling. And I'm just like, what the hell? Like, do I need a cup or something? Like I had no clue what was happening. And this, this woman who was probably about 4 or 5 years younger than me does not look like she's in the best of shape and everything. And I'm just thinking like, oh, they paired me with her because we have no clue what
right.
No, she knew what she was doing.
Yeah, you got set up, my friend.
It was another moment where I'm just like, I have no clue what's going on, and I feel powerless. This shorter, younger, you know, woman is just like flipping me around and stuff, and like putting her arm around my neck, and I'm just like, she's not even that strong, but like I'm tapping out like every 5 seconds. After that class, I went and I actually blacked out in my car for 20 minutes. Like I just remember that there was somebody walking by and they were just like, is he all right? And they're just like, yeah, just let him sit there. And, you know, like, so that was like class one. There was a class last week where we have a new student who has been going to our, no gi class. Mm-hmm. And he's a Marine Corps reservist. Now I'm probably older than him by about, I want to say like 6-7 years. He is in way better shape than me. He's a muscular guy, about my same height. And, you know, he's still in. So I'm thinking, like, I've been out for a while and I've gained some weight. I'm like, this guy's gonna freaking kill me. No matter how much I've learned, this guy's gonna kill me. I went 3 rounds with him and I submitted him 3 times. Yeah. And it was one of those moments where I'm just like, holy shit, like this actually worked. Like here this I works. Am. I'm like, holy shit. Like I have learned, like, you know, the dark side of the force or something. Like I am taking this guy down. Like if people on the street looked at both of us, they're going to think that guy's going to murder me. But I took him down. And I mean, he's a great sport about it. He's really interested in learning. I hope he comes back. He's going to be lethal one day because he has the athleticism. Right. All he needs is the technique. So he's going to be harder for me to submit. But it was one of those moments where it's just like, there, I think Jocko Willink says it. If there's a superpower on earth, it's jujitsu.
Yeah. No, that's so true. When you take on somebody who, like, you know, physically is stronger, taller, then most people will look at the two of you and be like, oh, that guy would win. And you just dominate them. For new people coming into jiu-jitsu, just like you said with the girl, that messes your mind up. I mean, I've rolled with a lot of people in my time, and you know, strong guys, you know, fat guys, all kinds of people. And what messed me up the most was, I'll tell you the story. It's pretty wild. I went to that Goran Ryan seminar up in Jersey. Mm-hmm. I was like, I got to go meet the king, man. I got to go meet the king of our sport. I'm going. So I show up, I drive 8.5 hours, after work, to Jersey. I get there. I'm like my back straight. Like, I didn't stop. You know, I stopped once for gas. My body's all cramping up in the car. I'm like, I get out, I'm stretching. I'm like, I'm so exhausted. I walk into Tom DeBlas's school. So I meet him, talk to his front desk lady. She says, we actually got a no-gi class going on right now. If you want to just hop on in. I'm like, yeah, let's go.
It's only been 8 hours. Like, let's do this.
Let's stretch my legs, right? So I put on my rash guard, walk on the mat. You know, it's time for open rolling time, right? So go with one guy. He's like a wrestler. He like straight up suplexes me. We scramble it out. So I go with one guy, beat him. I'm like, yeah, all right, I'm doing good. Let's go. And then I look over and there's this guy. He's about 145 pounds, right? Just looks cool. Looks kind of like a young kid, like maybe 20 years old. So I say, hey, man, you want to roll? And he's just like, you know, he's like, sure. I'm like, all right, let's go, man. You know, and
the introvert, but deadly ones.
Yeah, point like 0.01 seconds. He heel hooks me, and I'm like, okay, let's do that again. I'm like, maybe that was a fluke, right? Shake it off, right? Knuckle bump, go again. Heel hooks me again. You know, 2 seconds later, you know, in like 6 minutes, this guy tapped me out like 6 times, which, like, I've been beaten before, but never that quickly, and never that, like, I mean, he didn't even seem like he was trying. He was just like, everything I did, he was immediately like inverting and blocking. And turns out, you know, he's only like 20 or 21, but I think he's a brown belt now, but he's been training since he was like 7, you know, he's already been training 10 plus years and competing. And
before he could walk.
Exactly. He won in the adults bracket at 14. He was beating grown men in the jiu-jitsu competitions. And then I looked him up on, cause I was like, it was weird to me after he beat me. I was like, I've never lost that bad to anyone before. Like it messed me up. Cause I'm like, he's 145 pounds and we both know jiu-jitsu. So I'm like, what is going on? And then I look him up. He's like a Pan Am's champion. He's probably gonna be one of the next biggest stars in jiu-jitsu. He's like one of Tom DeBlas's top five, like you know, guys he's mentoring and training. But it really shook me because it was that reminder, like, oh man, like, jiu-jitsu works. Like, this guy's 145 pounds and he manhandled me. I felt like there was nothing I could do to this guy. And that's the feeling that people have, you know, they're kind of disillusioned when they go to jiu-jitsu to think, well, I could grapple somebody, I could ball them up. And then they meet someone who's been doing it for like 3 months. And then it's like, wait a minute, what the heck is going on? And then you run into somebody who's been doing it for 10, 15 years, and there's just nothing you can do.
What's crazy about the little guys too, is that jiu-jitsu is one of the only combat sports that identifies that body type as an actual factor in the fight. Yep. I think a lot of people, they either want to focus in on it like to a weird degree, like in MMA or in boxing, where it kind of makes sense. Like, you want to go against somebody in a similar weight bracket. I think some of the stuff with the UFC, sometimes their weight classes are a little bit skewed. That's a whole other thing. But like in jiu-jitsu, it's one of the only times where it's like, yeah, bigger guys have different problems than smaller guys. What I've noticed about the smaller guys, whether they're just like shorter dudes or dudes with like, you know, skinnier frames, is that their biggest challenge is that they've got to move faster. They know that time is not their friend, and that every second that they're not doing something, that's a second which a larger opponent in physicality has a very deliberate natural advantage over them. So those are the guys who I fear. There's a kid who just came over. He was a wrestler in high school. I think wrestling, if there's one martial art that really transfers over,
facts.
That scares the living shit out of me. It's the wrestlers, because they don't go on their back.
It's like peanut butter and jelly. They go together. And you talk about going, you go to competitions, like just competitions. And everyone's like, you see a guy walk up, like you're like, oh, he's a wrestler. Oh, he's a wrestler. Like, he's got the little hunchback
and he's just kind of like walking over.
Because everyone fears that in jiu-jitsu, like, oh, being out wrestled, like, oh, he's a wrestler. You know, like, so you just hope that your jiu-jitsu is better than his aggressiveness, you know.
But this kid, like, okay, this kid is 19. He's probably like, you know, a buck 50 in weight, and I didn't think that he had hit puberty. And I mean, he did what that guy did to you. Like, he just tore me apart, and he's like huffing and puffing like Gollum, and I'm like, just get away from me. Like, I don't know what's happening, but it's crazy. I mean, I finished Breathe by Hickson.
And I just got that. I just started listening to it the other day.
It is so wild. And what I didn't realize was a lot of the history behind that, like that first UFC.
Oh yeah.
Like Hickson, like what's crazy is Hoyce and everyone else, they're like, Hickson is like the most dangerous mother effer on earth.
He's the man. Like, he is the man of the family of jiu-jitsu. He's the number one.
But it's still wild. And I mean, you know this from watching that first UFC. Like, they intentionally picked Hoyce because they're like, Hoyce is like the skinniest, he's the scrawniest amongst us, he's the weakest, he sucks the most. If we can show that the weakest amongst us can beat all these guys, imagine what these others could do.
Yeah.
And it's just so wild when, you know, like I went and watched all those old fights that Hickson references where Hoyce is going against like Ken Shamrock, professional wrestler, like just a giant compared to him. It's a David and Goliath situation, and all these other guys. It's like it's wild how in the martial arts and combat sports community, you always have these people saying, well, what martial art is better than this, or who could win this guy versus this guy? I mean, of course, the athlete and the practitioner is always like the biggest factor. But at the same time, it's like, you know, the fact that people are still debating whether or not jiu-jitsu works, or is jiu-jitsu good just for sport, or is it good for a fight? It's like that's pretty much been solved. Like, the answer is pretty cut and clear.
Yeah. No, and people like to debate that. I mean, nowadays, like, the truth is, I mean, America has so many of these other martial arts here from the movies and from Asia and stuff like that. So there's a lot of those guys who study that stuff and they're really proud of their lineage and history. But I mean, a lot of those martial arts have been watered down now. And if anybody asks me, like, what is a martial art that I should get into? I'm like, well, what are you looking for? Like, self-defense? I'm like, jiu-jitsu. I'm like, you want to become a fighter? I'm like, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, and Muay Thai. like, oh, what about Tai Chi? What about karate? What about, like, no. This is what I just told you. Wrestling, Muay Thai. Like,
just time out with the rest of that. You're just going to be wasting
the rest of it's trash. I mean, great histories. I'm sure it's great on television, but in real life, I mean, they give out, like, you know, you see these 14, 15-year-old kids with black belts. And, I mean, you probably said, too, I'll go places. I'll be at, like, at Chick-fil-A, and I'll see, like, some kid in there with a black belt and like Taekwondo. And I'm like, I could kick that guy through the window.
If you're wondering whether you, a grown man, can beat a child, I don't think his Taekwondo is going to do much.
I don't think it's going to do much, but I mean, there's kids like, you know, those kids, that know jiu-jitsu, man, they're better than, you know, the adults that don't, you know. I think it's just that realization that in life, there's stuff that works and there's stuff that just doesn't work. And there's a whole list of stuff that doesn't work. But even with the jiu-jitsu for self-defense, like you talk about self-defense, and that's kind of what jiu-jitsu is good for. You know, what it's good for in general is that it gives a smaller guy the ability to beat a bigger opponent. And I think that aspect of it gets lost nowadays. You know, people think of it just more of the sport and stuff like that. But most people, you say, what do you do for self-defense? They'll be like, oh, you got to learn Krav Maga. And I'm like, I've got friends who do Krav Maga. I love them, but I know a lot of guys who do Krav Maga, and almost all of them are like obese. Like, it's just like, I mean, it's just the way it is. Like, I mean, my friends that do it aren't, but most of them, like, it's one of those catchy, like, ooh, Krav Maga, like, you're going to do this and this. And most of that stuff doesn't work. You know, it's like, but at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, biggest thing that, like, totally screwed with my mind was I didn't realize that my school was a school that did live rolling every class. And your first opportunity, like, you have the option of not rolling, but it's like everyone's going to look at you and they're going to think, well, that person's a pussy. But, right. Like, you know, when I was rolling, when I was rolling for the first time, like, immediately I'm thinking back to my Taekwondo days. I'm like, we're not wearing pads. He's obviously beating me. When will somebody call a timeout? Like, you know, I'm just like mm-hmm. I had like a little panic attack. But it's like, it's the only time I've really seen somebody actually have to pressure test what they're working on. And I mean, what's really what used to bug me a lot is when you would have somebody come in and this is their first class. And like, for me, it was, I've been doing it a few months. Like, I think I've learned a few things and I'm still struggling to take down this person who has like no experience. I had to stop letting that frustrate me, because what I had to realize is this person is not, you know, doing jiu-jitsu. He's not fighting jiu-jitsu with jiu-jitsu. He's fighting to win. It's like you're dealing with
raw strength. Yeah.
An uncooperative person who just does not want to be embarrassed. And I'm just like, this is as, you know, difficult as it's going to get. When you started up again with BJJ and you were getting regular and you were attending the same school for a longer period of time, you know, what were some of your initial challenges that you found?
Man, well, mine the start was just the weight. Like, when I stopped doing BJJ, I think I was like 190. And when I came back, I was like 244. So like I was at my like heaviest weight, like, you know, not even half that was muscle, just a big old belly, you know? And so coming back as a bigger guy, like, I found just like moving was harder. And you know, breathing, you know, there's so much, there's cardio and then there's like jiu-jitsu cardio, and you just get so gassed so quick. So I had to get really comfortable with being on my back and people being on top of me, 'cause they could just out move me. They were just so quick. So I developed, I think, a fairly good half guard, because I had to out of necessity. So I was like, I'm always on my back. Like, I just got to get a half guard down. So I started looking into, you know, Tom DeBlas's half guard domination, Eddie Bravo's lockdown. And you know, I'm like, I'm a big guy. So I was like, I gotta get a good defense. Now I have a pretty good lockdown, but, you know, but that was I think the hardest part for me was just one, getting back into it. You know, you feel so tired, your body's sore, getting the cardio back, remembering the moves. I mean, it's just like anything else. If you don't do it for a while, like, you're not thinking about something, it's just not gonna be, you know, second nature. You know, the less you have to think in jiu-jitsu, the better. The more like your body just knows what to do, the more you know what to do, just more you can chain moves together, you don't have to pause. And you know, so for me, it was a lot of technical stuff, a lot of physical stuff. And then the biggest challenge, I think, too, is when I left, you know, It was just the same belt as a lot of my friends. And when I came back, they were like, way higher belts. I'm like, oh man, like the mental aspect, like if I had just stayed with it all these years, I'd be where they are. And then you'd have people coming in, they'd be like, I think one time it was like, I've been doing this on and off again for years. And a guy had just started like jujitsu like that day. And I was trying to show him something and he just wasn't listening to me. He's like, we're the same belt. Like, what do you know? And I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, bro, you know, I'll strangle you, you know,
like, say it again, man.
You know, so it was just a lot of, like a lot of ego, a lot of just training. And then and slowly, you know, between losing the weight, between getting better, you know, getting to know the people, you kind of just get in a rotation where it just becomes a part of your life. Like, you know, where a lot of the things that bothered you whenever you're doing something, they don't bother you anymore because you're like, oh, well, I'm going to do this tomorrow and then the next day and then the next day. So it's just, you start doing it more for you, you know, it just, I got to be here. And a lot of those problems don't matter, you know, as you just keep doing it. You know, if you're only going to be doing it for a short time, then those things will really bother you. You know what people say, or if you have a bad role, you're just like, dang it. Like, how did I lose to that guy? You know? But then if you just come back the next day and you're like, oh, I'm going to keep coming back. So
the one thing that I had to tell myself was like, I had to shed a lot of really bad habits. One of them being like, what I do think was one of the things about Taekwondo that maybe is a bigger like systemic problem is the rapid belt advancement.
Oh, yeah.
Because like when I started Taekwondo up again in like middle school through high school, I got pretty far going to about 3-4 classes a week and doing a few tournaments within a couple of years. And that was, it was pretty rapid succession. I also did like these weekend, like these summer, like intensive camps where you could go up a belt in like 1 week.
Accelerate. Yeah. Thinking, super accelerate.
Yeah. I'm thinking, well, you know, I'm the best person ever. I started in September and I didn't get my first stripe until January. And like a lot of people would look at me, they're like, you've been doing, like my coworkers were like, you've been doing this for how long and you're still a white belt and you've only got one stripe and you're doing this all the time. Your nose is messed up. There's cuts on your face. You've got so many like handprint bruises on your forearms. You look like Rihanna when she was with Chris Brown. Like, you know, what's up with you? I mean, it's a completely different thing. But for me, one, like the biggest issue I had to deal with was the fact that I could not handle people being on top of me, being in my personal space.
Yeah.
Like the first time I had a grown man's crotch in my face, I wanted to scream.
little north-south action.
Yeah. Like I'm just like, this is like, you know, he's getting a little bit excited right now and I don't know what's happening. That was the first thing I had to deal with because I had some pretty severe panic attacks coming that. I mean, what ultimately led to my medical separation from the guard was a car accident a few years before I separated. And that messed up my neck. I gained weight from all the pain medications I was on. Like it wrecked me physically and it messed with me mentally. So my big thing was like, you know, I just need to get in a routine. I'm like, I'm here. I'm the older, like millennial type dude. It's like, I just need to show up and maybe I'll be halfway good. So my goal was at the beginning, go to 2 classes a week and maybe avoid that Wednesday one. But after a couple months, I was like, you know what? Like I want to go every night. So I was going 3-4 days a week. Yeah. It became really weird because I'm like, you know, I'm not flexible. So I'm like, how am I going to do half this stuff? The first time I actually felt super proud of myself was the first time I rubber guarded somebody.
Oh, that's a great feeling.
Yeah. I was like, I have just turned into like, you know, a yogi master or something. Yeah. I'm like, this guy is trapped here. It's like, yeah, now you're dealing with a situation you don't want to be in, huh? And that was the point where I'm like, I'm actually picking things up. I'm actually developing a lot of like the comfort on the mat that I wanted. But what I began to really notice over time was like, it was actually impacting my life off the mats. I was eating better. The biggest thing for me was that I was calmer and it wasn't just that I'm so tired, I can't deal with things. It's that, you know, and it's in Hicks and Gracie's book, which I mean, when you get to some of the stuff, like towards the end of the book, you're going to be crying your eyes out. There's some deep stuff in there, but like the part where he's just like, you know, combat is life accelerated with heavier consequences. Like it really began to dial down a lot of things where I was putting a lot of unnecessary pressure. It's crazy. And I mean, with what I've really admired about kind of watching your journey through a distance is that you have really jumped into it as a lifestyle, seeing you going and like meeting, did you meet Hoist or somebody else?
Yeah, no, I know, Hoist, Gracie, his son, Connor Gracie, met him a few times now. Great, great guys. Part of the association. I think I met Eddie Bravo, Gordon Ryan, Tom DeBlas, we just met Frankie Edgar, just a bunch of people.
It's like meeting the freaking Avengers.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I always make a point of asking them, like, you know, how to get better. Like they have a Q&A. I'm like, hey, what do you do? And almost everybody says just drilling. They always say drilling to get better at jujitsu. I usually ask them something funny so they remember me next time. Like I asked the first time I met Hoist Gracie. You know, he's super intimidating whenever you meet him, cause he's very serious. And, he was like, you know, does anyone have any questions for me? And like, nobody is saying anything. And I'm like,
no one wants to look dumb.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there like, I'm sitting there like, so no one's going to ask Hoist Gracie a question. Like the man came here to train us and ask, you know, answer questions. So I was just like, well, shoot, I'm gonna ask him a question. I was like, hey, Mr. Gracie, like, was Shamrock like covered in baby oil whenever you were fighting him? And he looks at me and he's just like, I didn't put baby oil on him. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I'm not saying you did, but did somebody put baby oil on him? And he's like, man. And every time I see him, I can just tell he's like, oh, it's that baby oil guy again. I'm like, he just looks super greasy. I don't know.
He just walks on stage, just glimmering immediately.
Glimmering, yeah, just soaked. And he's a great guy. He travels so much and is always training, always focusing on the self-defense aspect and trying to get people to remember that, you know, he says this thing about like, you know, this jiu-jitsu has become so much of a sport now that, you know, we look at it like, you know, say if a big guy comes by and like pinches your girlfriend on the butt and you're going to say, hold on, baby, let me go handle this. Excuse me, sir. How much do you weigh? You know, what belt are you? Oh, sorry, honey. You know, he's out of my weight class. He's a higher belt. I can't face him. No, you got to be able to defend yourself and your family and stuff. So he really focuses on the self-defense, on the stuff that works with the strikes and with the takedowns and that part of it. And I really appreciate that. Cause I mean, I love sport jujitsu, but I'm always reminded of the physical altercations of life. So I want to be able to, you know, get ready to smash some heads and not get hit.
Yeah. I mean, this has been the only time where I've actually felt like if anything were to happen, God forbid, I'm actually going to be safe. And there have been some situations like in downtown Milwaukee, with the homeless or with drunk people or with something or with somebody who is just, I did have an altercation recently where somebody was attempting to start a fight with me. Luckily it was a situation where, because I was the calmer person, it's like, I can tell that this dude is fronting. Like you can, it's so weird. I was, a friend of mine who's a blue belt. We were rolling the other day and it was probably like the most intense roll we ever had with each other. And I was proud and he was proud because he's like, you've really advanced a lot. This is the, like, usually he's like, you know, usually I have to hold myself back not to destroy you immediately. But this time he actually had me on the run. It was a good conversation. But what I mentioned was, it's like, you know, I feel like, with the people at my school, and I've gone to some other schools in the area, like Neutral Ground, Milwaukee. I've got some really good friends there. Like I like going to their open mat to get a little bit of a different experience of people. But it's like, you know, I'm like, I feel like I'm not the best student in my school. I feel like everyone here can still kind of kick my ass regularly. And the thing he told me was, but dude, you know, and I mentioned the story about the Marine earlier. It's like, you know, that's your average person. Your average person who you're going to get into a physical altercation with is not here on the mats 3-4 days a week.
Exactly.
And it's those situations where it's like with the individual who got in my, who rushed towards me, who got in my space, who is gesturing to trying to get me to react. It's like, I'm looking at this person and I see right through them. And it's like one of those moments where it's like, yes, I know I can destroy this little man if something were to happen, but what are the, what, because there are repercussions for everything. It's like, is he worth the police report? Is he worth going to court for? Is he worth, you know, potentially injuring myself or something? I don't know if this guy has a knife or anything. I don't know what's going on. Luckily, I was able to bring down the altercation, but it wasn't because it's like, I don't want to fight this person. It's like, this is the first step of it. It's dealing with that immediate fear of the person. And the person who's confident and calm is the person who's ultimately going to win that situation. That was when I was like, you're not
afraid. You're not afraid to fight, but it's like you use your that calmness to be like, you know, you can take care of yourself, but just to de-escalate it. Like, I'm gonna give this guy. And the truth is, most guys, unless they're intoxicated, you know, even when they're intoxicated for the most part, do not want to fight. Mm-hmm. Nobody really, you know, a few people actually want to get in a physical altercation. And the ones that do usually aren't the guys who have been in fights before. So if you give a guy like an out in a fight, he'll probably take it. You know, if you give him a way to get out of it without looking like a punk, you know, you just de-escalate the whole situation. Be like, hey, man, it's all good, bro. Just let him, you know, you kind of almost let him be the bigger guy. Like, hey, man, it's all cool. It's cool, man. You should, because you don't want to get in that point where you have to, you know, put a guy down. And who knows what happens, you know?
You don't know if his friends are going to come by. Like, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, the whole thing, like, it's only as good as until it stops being good.
Yep.
When did you get to the point where you're like, you know, I'm actually learning something. I'm actually doing pretty well compared to how I was when I started. When was that realization moment for you?
I think, you know, it's like, it was hard for me to tell, because it's like, you know, if you train with the same group of people, you know, you're always like, you guys are both getting better at the same time. So you're just like, it's hard to see how much you're growing. But I think for me, it was like when I started at first, it was like a slow thing. And then when I just started lasting longer from not being tapped out by people. And then when I just started tapping out, you know, I heard this on the Joe Rogan podcast. He's like, if you want to get better at jiu-jitsu, just start strangling white belts. So I was always trying to roll with the better people, being like, oh, I'm going to challenge myself by this. And then I'd, you know, get beaten, but I was like, I think I did good, but I just started really focusing on just learning how to manhandle like white belts and get really good at submissions. And then when I would roll against the higher belts, really just focus on staying calm, escaping and being more dominant. And, I think the first time I tapped out this purple belt. And my friend saw it, and he just looks at me like, I don't know what happened. It's like one of those moments, like when you're rolling with somebody and you do good, you just hope someone else sees it, you know?
Oh my God.
So somebody else knows that you're can see your progress. It's not just you being like, oh, I did this. And everyone's like, oh, sure. You know, like, oh, sure you did.
Dude, first time I heel hooked somebody. Yeah, at my school, we do a specific 45 minute class on Tuesdays, which is all leg locks.
Yep.
And I suck at that. Like I've got like these meaty thighs, and I'm just like, you know, I'm just from the waist down. It's like, I'm just trying not to be like, you know, in a position where I'm going to get like a leg cramp. I was rolling with a friend of mine the other day. He's a blue belt. He's an incredibly good athlete. I heel hooked him in one of the rounds and submitted him, and nobody saw it. And I'm just like, did it happen? Like, this is a glorious moment. I got everything in place. My feet were good. I just did it naturally. And I'm like, nobody's there. But I have to tell myself, but I know I did it. And he knows I did it.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing with when you start going against better people and stuff like that, you know, I realize this now too, where sometimes when you're rolling with higher belts, they're not going very hard on you. Like, they're going like with just enough energy to like keep the motions and let you work. And then sometimes they'll just get the submission and go to the next thing. And the other times you'll be rolling with them and you know, for sure, like, you know, in your heart, like, oh, that guy didn't want, you know, that guy doesn't want me to win. So there's this time. So this time I was rolling with this guy, I think it was kind of like a more of a, like a lighthearted medium lighthearted role. You know, I think he was aware that I could be a threat, but at the same time, I could tell maybe not to him. It wasn't that big of a deal. And he has my back, and I don't know. I think I just went, I just blacked out. I went like Steven from Moon Knight on this. I was just like, and I came to, and I had his back somehow, and I just like had my arms around his throat, and I was pulling that head back, sinking it deeper, and I tap him with like a, you know, a rear naked choke, and I look over my friend Brad's in the corner, like, you know, just like, you know, like we just like discovered goals. Like, did that really just happen? And, but then I noticed, you know, and then we rolled again, then I got him like a heel hook or something. But every time after that, I could tell the roll just amplified like, you know, tenfold. Now it was not like, oh, I'm just going to roll with this guy. And now it's like, I can tell the pressure for him. Like, he can't lose to me now. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it's happened. You can't go back to before that happened.
No, you can't go back. So now this isn't like, these aren't lighthearted roles. These are like, I can't lose to this cat, you know? Now I'm in my mind, I'm like, it's possible. Is it possible that I could beat this guy? No, I got to try, you know? And you know, there's just a few experiences like that where, and then I went to a few competitions and I think the biggest thing about jiu-jitsu and in life, it's a mental thing. You know, you have to have confidence and aggression. And if you have those two things, you know, a healthy confidence and a healthy amount of aggression, you're going to do great. But that's the thing with jiu-jitsu is like getting confidence with other people who do jiu-jitsu, especially people you don't know how good they are. Like, you know, with me in general, if I'm walking around the street and I just see anybody, I'm be like, man, I could probably strangle them. I'm good, right? But then you put yourself in a jiu-jitsu context with a guy across from you. You don't know his belt. You don't know how good he is. Now your mind's spinning like, can I beat that guy? What if he does this? What if he's a wrestler? What if he knows, you know? And so it's having that confidence to just go out there against anybody and try your best. And then aggression, not being scared, because, you know, in jiu-jitsu, you know, you hesitate, you start getting nervous, your stomach drops, you get all dry mouthed, and, you know, you hesitate and you get murdered on the mat. So, and if you can keep that, if you can keep a high aggression, high confidence, you'll do great. And when I would go to these tournaments, I had almost like that kind of like that ignorant level of confidence where I was kind of like, I don't know what I don't know. So I'm just going to go out there and give it a shot. Like, I wasn't even really that nervous. I was more like excited because I'm just like, oh, this is going to be fun. And then, and then the more you do it, you start getting more nervous. Cause then it's like, oh, wait a minute, here we go again. You know? But I got in a few matches where, you know, I rolled with one guy and, you know, I got him in an Americana and he didn't want to tap. And I ended up just tearing his shoulder out of his, tearing his shoulder out of socket, like in front of everybody.
Damn.
And, he had like tap with his feet and it was just wild. Like, I was just like, you know, at our school, we always say, before you roll, you know, how do we roll? You know, we say no ego, you know, how we do submissions, we say slow and easy. That's kind of like our mantra before we roll with each other. And I'm out there, you know, my mind rolling with this guy at a tournament, like, how do we do submissions? I'm like, slow and easy. I'm like, I'm like breaking this guy's shoulder out. Like,
where was the ref?
Yeah. Well, my coach, one of my coaches, he actually called it. Like the ref didn't even see the guy tapping. Cause the guy had been like trying to kick. I was on a side control and the guy was trying to kip escape the whole time. So when he was tapping with his feet, it just looked like he was just trying to escape like he had been. And my coach was like, he's tapping. You know, just, and another time I had a guy, I put him in a lockdown, you know, this guy came at me like it was, he was dipping during the competition. Like it was a country boy. He put a pie, had a pile of dip in his mouth. And he's like, yeah. And I could tell it was his first competition. And he came at me like, I could tell his adrenaline was going 100%. Like he thought he was in a fight to the death. And he tackles me and I'm like, okay, here we go. Like I wasn't expecting him to come out like that. And I throw a lockdown on his leg and I extend it. I'm trying to go for an elevator sweep and I hear his knee pop, like pop. And it was loud. It sounded like a gunshot. And I looked at him. I was like, hey man, are you all right? And he's like, I'm fine. And I'm like, okay, cool. So then I elevate his leg, getting ready to do the sweep. And I hear all the muscles in his leg tear. Like, and you know how if your body's touching someone else's body, you can like feel what's happening. Like I had like my shins on his shins. So I could feel his leg and I could feel the ligaments and muscles and his legs tearing.
Oh, that's so like, gross. That's so gross.
I got it on video. I'll show you sometime. But I was just like, I go, dude, are you okay? Cause I'm like, I can feel it. And I'm like, there's no way this guy's leg's okay.
This is like the Black Knight from Monty Python.
Yeah. he looks at me. He looks at me and he goes, I think I need a minute. And I was like, no, ref, it's over. I was like, he's done. He said he needs a minute. It's over. I called the ref over and the ref's like, oh, did he tap? And I'm like, no, but he said he needs a minute. I'm pretty sure his leg's destroyed. The guy is like, I didn't tap. It's not over. I didn't tap. So the ref, and I look at the ref and I'm like, but he says that he needs a minute. I'm pretty sure he can't walk. So the ref's like, all right, we'll get up, go to the center of the mat. We'll start the match again. The guy stands up. He could barely walk. He's like limping to the center of the mat. We go back into the half guard. I throw back into the lockdown. At this point, I just let it go. I'm like, I'm not going to hurt this guy anymore. I just oopa him over and just stay on top of him. I win by points. And afterwards, he had to go straight to the hospital. His leg was inflamed. I'm pretty sure, you know, he probably couldn't walk again for, you know, months. I mean, his leg was completely destroyed. And, it just goes to show like the ego sometimes involved in combat sports and jiu-jitsu is so much that it's like, you know, people don't want to tap. They don't want to lose. But I mean, you can get seriously injured, like, you know, and it's just insane. It's not worth going to the hospital over.
Yeah, there was a moment where like when I finally got into a routine where I'm doing this like every minute I can. At one point, I was going during lunch breaks.
Yeah.
You know, I was in this mindset of I'm just going to try and go to as many classes as possible. I'm never going to tap. And the first major injury I got was I completely threw out my back. Like Ooh. it was,
I remember that. Yeah. I remember talking about that.
It was rough because I couldn't sleep. I could barely drive. I mean, taking a shit was a next level challenge for me. I had to take a couple of weeks off for that. And I went and saw a chiropractor. I had to go see this dude twice a week for 3 weeks.
Jeez.
And luckily he really fixed me up. He really did a great job. But he looked at me. He's like, why are you doing this? And I'm like, oh, you know, I just need to do something. I need a hobby and all this other stuff. He's like, no. I'm not questioning the jiu-jitsu. Why are you going as hard as you are? What are you trying to do? And I was I don't want people to think I'm weak. I don't want people to think I suck or I'm not into this. He's like, are you trying to be an MMA fighter or something? I'm like, no. He's like, then just fall back to why you want to do it. And you know, it was one of those moments where I'm like, one, like, who are you to talk to me about my life? And then I was like, well, you know, he actually makes some good points. And when I dialed it back, when I began to accept, like, you know, tap, like that was a big thing for me. Tap.
It's free. It's like, free. Just tap.
Yeah. Like when you get injured, take some time off and then go back as soon as you can. Like, it was one of those moments where for me, it was like, you know, refocus on the actual purpose and put the ego aside, because like, I want to do this for as long as possible, but I don't want to be one of those guys who has to get like, you know, an hemorrhage disc surgery or something like that, or replace knees. It's like, I already have enough like damages and shit. It's like, I don't need to add more intentionally into that. Like, I can't bend one of my fingers, but like, you know, well, much, but it's like, you know, but you know, I don't want to like injure my neck again. That was a big thing for me. That was a deal I had to make with my fiance. It's like, she was worried. It's like, you know, you can't do boxing because of your head, because of all the concussions and stuff I had.
Right.
So boxing was out, and it's like, you know, if jiu-jitsu, it's like, you better protect your neck. And I had to make that promise to her. So at first she was like, when I was first starting, like, she was supportive, but extremely hesitant. And then when I threw out my back and it was like, I was actually incredibly worried. She was like, maybe you just need to stop. But then when kind of let that go, and I'm taking better care of myself and I'm more honest with myself about things, now it's gotten to the point where not only do I think my relationship with jiu-jitsu is better, but also she's not like, oh, you should stop this. Now she's incredibly supportive because she trusts me to make a better decision for myself. And it's, you know, it's moments like that where it's like, huh, maybe that's the inner peace I was looking for.
No, man, it is. It's like, it's one of those things where you can go, you know, it's like being sprung for a chick. You can go head over heels for jiu-jitsu and then just get your heart broken or your neck broken. You know, you gotta have a, you know, a healthy relationship with boundaries. And it's hard, especially as a dude, you know, you go in there and you got another dude on top of you. And, you know, a lot of sports or a lot of things you can just talk about, and you know, it's hard to prove who's better, but you know, with like football back in the day, like I used to play football in high school, and someone else could say that. You never know who was better back in the day, you know. But you talk about jujitsu, it's like we can find out who's better right now.
The mat don't lie.
And who's better means I could kill you, and that's a lot of ego. You know, that's hard to rein in. And when you get somebody on top, there's times where I've had people on me, and I held submit. They've been, you know, arm bars or chokes, and I've been like, can I hold out? Like, is it worth it? Like, you know, just because you don't want to feel that way, but it's, you know, at the end of the day, it ain't worth it. You know, to have to go to the hospital and stop doing what you love. Like those guys in those competition, my coach told me, he's like, I just don't think people like losing to you. I don't know if it's your face or your laugh or what, but people just do not want to tap to you. And I don't know. I don't know what it is. Cause I always love seeing after competitions, like two guys who just duke it out. They like bro hug. And there's like that mutual, like Rocky and Apollo respect. Like if I start beating somebody in jujitsu, they're basically like, hey man, you're going to have to kill me. You're gonna have to
do it.
And I don't know why it is that way, but it's like most of the time when I roll or, you know, go to competitions, I have to, like, you know, send. They gave me the nickname when I went back to my gym. One of the guys there is a buddy of mine. He was like, man, you're like, I'm gonna start calling you the surgeon, dude. You keep sending everybody to the hospital. And they gave me that as my nickname, and I put that as my Instagram handle. We have to roll in a competition, man. They might as well call the hospital. And the thing is, I'm not trying to send you there, but once I get a submission, I know you're not going to want to tap, so I'm going to have to break it.
You should just make eye contact with them. It's like, this is your choice. You did this to yourself.
Yeah. The last guy, I told my friend, I was like, man, I was just like, bro, don't do this. And I felt like I was fighting Ricky Bobby. He was like, break it, Pepe Le Pew. Break it. I'm like, why? Like, what the heck?
Or Revenge of the Sith. It's like, it's over, Anakin. I have the high ground.
Don't try it. You underestimate my power. You know, so it's one of those things. Just got to keep that ego in check. And you're like me, man. We want to do this for the rest of our lives. And we like the exercise. We like the whole lifestyle. You know, so it's got to keep the ego in check and keep a healthy amount of rolling in and injury prevention and just, you know, listening to your body, you know. Otherwise, you know, our girls in our lives going to be like, hey, you got to stop doing that. this is a negative thing, you know.
The goal is to avoid that conversation for as long as possible.
And I think you hit the point. What's worse is when you tell people, like, what belt you are, they'd be like, what belt are you? Like, I'm a white belt. Like, I was talking to Eddie Bravo in Florida about this, and he was just like, man, I couldn't wait to be a blue belt. And this is Eddie Bravo talking, like the master, right? He's like, I couldn't wait to be a blue belt. He's like, that's all I could think about. That's all I could dream about. And he's like, because everyone knows what a white belt is, and everyone knows what a black belt is, but everything in between, nobody knows anything about. So it's like, all you know is if you're a white belt, you suck. And if you're a black belt, you're the best. You know? He's like, I just don't want to be a white belt. I don't want to be known as someone who sucks. So. And that's like the perspective to have when you're in it. Just keep grinding. You know, just you know, like you said, you show up like you're dating Chris Brown, you know, coming into work all banged up. Like, what do you do when you leave here? I'm like, I fight homeless people.
Yeah,
I fight people in a bathrobe, man. Like, come at me, bro.
every time I used to walk into the office and they would look at me like with a black eye or a busted nose or something, like I suddenly understood that movie Fight Club more. It's like,
exactly.
Yeah, people do notice this. It's like, it does get to the point where it's like, they're going to question it. But I mean, it's just part of it all. And I think the one good thing is that some people call jiu-jitsu a fad because it's grown so fast. I think that's a point where it's like, you know what? That means that people are noticing it. And I think a lot more people are starting to understand. And I mean, it gets a whole new different type of respect. I mean,
100%. Like, yeah. It's gaining so much traction now between, you know, ADCC, between all these competitions and organizations and ONE and the UFC and all these other martial art organizations and clubs and teams and gyms, that people are starting to give it the amount of respect as an art and as a style of fighting and as a, you know, just something that's more common to talk about. Like, I hate when you tell somebody, if I tell somebody what kind of martial art I do, the next day they'll get it wrong. I'd be like, I do Thai boxing. I do Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I do Gracie jiu-jitsu, right? You see that guy the next day, he's like, oh, how was karate? You know, how was taekwondo? And I'm like, bro, I do not do those. I do not do that. I do Thai boxing and I do jiu-jitsu. And you see him again. Oh, how was your karate practice? And you're just like, you want a free lesson? Like, I will give you a free lesson in jiu-jitsu. Like, but it's getting you more popularity because these promotions, and I'm excited because I think it's something that's really good for people in general. And I tell you what, there's something about the sport. You know, it's like, you know, going to the same school as somebody, or, you know, maybe studying the same field as somebody. But there's something about doing jiu-jitsu that brings people together. Like, I could just meet somebody and the only thing we could have in common is jiu-jitsu. And that is such a bridge, you know, compared to everything else in your life. Like, I meet somebody who does jiu-jitsu, we immediately have, you know, endless things to talk about, endless going back and forth. And there's just a bond that's there. Like, it brings people together so quick. And
dude, if everyone did jiu-jitsu, there would be world peace.
There would be, because there would be, you know, Gordon Ryan would be our king, and there would be peace on earth. But, you know, there's just that kind of like that chillness that comes with doing jiu-jitsu. And, yeah, I saw everybody I meet to be like, oh, what's something that you love? I'm like, jiu-jitsu, man, you should try it. But, you know, a lot of people are still like, oh, I wouldn't want to wrestle with a sweaty man. And I'm like, yeah, it can be pretty gay at times.
What I hate are the guys who are just like, man, I don't know if I could hold myself back. I might accidentally kill a guy. And it's like,
oh, yeah. Up. Yeah. Yeah. No, you're not. I think I would just freak out and punch a drill sergeant. You know, I just freak out and hit you. I'm like, no, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't. Like, it's and that's the thing, is a lot of people with fighting, especially guys, like, they have an idea that they can fight, but, you know, unless you train, most dudes can't fight. You might get a lucky shot, but, you know, you throw a double leg on somebody and just start, you know, running a clinic on them, and they're just like, stop. There's nothing they can do, you know.
Got lucky. Like, no fights would ever end up on the ground.
Yeah, like, almost every fight ends up on the ground.
It always gets to that point. Well, dude, I think this is a great place to wrap it up. You know, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you know, your support when I was really going through those rough periods, and the support you still kind of give me as a brother and all this, has just been, you know, just really incredible for me. And I do really, really appreciate it, because this hit me on levels that I had not felt really since my first like year in the Army. Like, it hit me emotionally, it hit me spiritually, it hit me physically. It's like, you know, I have to carry this with me all day. The humiliation, the fear, the pain, eventually that turns into, you know, just being confident, that turns into, you know, being stronger, that goes into seeing it like from a view of like, you're getting better every day instead of you're just getting hurt all the time. Like, it has been a great thing for me. And that's why I just want as many people as possible, just, you know, become familiar with this. And even if it's not jiu-jitsu for some people, even if it's just something else that challenges you on all three of those different fields of being, I think that's the problem with a lot of folks. It's like what Mike Tyson says when it comes to social media. It's like, you know, a lot of people just, you know, they're not afraid of getting punched, you know, as Mike Tyson would say it. It's like, you know, they're not afraid of getting punched in the face anymore. It's kind of like that. And it's like, you know, I've made friends through jiu-jitsu who otherwise I would have never encountered, and even
never would have met these
people. We wouldn't have had the friendship that we have. And for me, that's the real empowering thing about it.
Yeah. I appreciate you hearing that, man. I love, you know, motivating people with jiu-jitsu, and I mean, it's done a lot in my life, and I'm seeing what it's done in your life. And I mean, you go to a gym, you got a girl, you know, you may have like a 34-year-old single mom in there just trying to get some confidence back. You go in there, you'll have, like you said, like a jacked Marine guy who's just trying to get better at killing. You know, you go in there and you'll have, like, you know, some you'll have that a crackhead from 7-Eleven in there. You'll have, you know, an 11-year-old kid who's just trying to do something after school. You'll have a bunch of just regular people just trying to get better in life, and you put them all together and you just start progressing and learning and growing. And, you know, you walk in with all your troubles, and, you know, there's days where I just like, man, I do not want to go train. But then I remember that I'm like, I have never left jiu-jitsu worse than when I went in. 100%. I always leave better than when I went in. And that's something you can't buy. So I'm like, I just get up and go, you know. So we're just spreading the word, brother. Spread the word. Man.
Well, Justin, I greatly appreciate you. I know you've got an Instagram page and stuff like that. You want to pitch anything?
Yeah, just I'm on Instagram, Justin the Surgeon Hayward. Like I said, my tag, you know, just post, got some posts on there. I'm still getting used to the social media thing, but I usually post my travels of meeting celebs and hitting them up with hard hitting questions like how do I get better?
You know, I want to be like you. Did Ken Shamrock have baby oil on?
Yeah, like how do I'm like. I witnessed, I mean, hopefully I don't get sued for this. I've witnessed what goes on with marijuana and 10 planets. I've seen it.
I don't think they're hiding that much.
Yeah, they're not hiding. It's legal in most of the states they're at. But for me, honestly, those are the coolest guys though. Like I love those 10 planet brothers. Like they're all so chill. And one thing I love about them is that they don't have a belt system really. They don't wear gis. So everyone's kind of, I mean, they got colored rash guards, but everyone's equal when you walk in and you start. So, I mean, you could go against the instructor, you go against some guy and you don't know who's who. And so I like that sometimes just being like, hey, let's just see what happens, you know? but yeah, I'm on Instagram and just hit me up and let's do this again sometime. I appreciate you having me on and excited to see you keep going and keep pursuing your dreams and getting better. And we got to catch up sometime and hit up a tournament or something or go to a seminar.
Oh, we got to roll together at some point.
I know, like Rocky and Apollo.
It's got to happen. Well, dude, I appreciate you. And folks, if you appreciate conversations like this, like the one that Justin and I were having, if you want to continue to hear, you know, the journeys that we all go on in this great challenge called life, please go ahead and do me a favor. Follow me on Instagram, Twitter, at Hey Remso, HeyRemso. And please, it costs you nothing, but it means everything to me. A 5-star rating and review across Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you're listening to us across Al Gore's amazing internet. Helps keep this conversation going. As always, I'm Remso W. Martinez. Be safe, be good. Good night.